is an application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for office and retail use to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 1.5 acres more or less, lying southeast of Route 24, 430 feet southwest of Road 284, also known as Marbury Knoll Road, and also being northwest of Road 284, Marbury Knoll Road, 515 feet south of Route 24. Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on this application on October 22nd of 2009. Made the recommendation on November 5th of 2009. Council held public hearing on November 10th of 2009. In the commission public hearing, we had received an exhibit booklet from the applicant. We heard DLDOT comments, Sussex Conservation District comments, County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division comments. We'd received a letter in opposition from Chester Bush and Leroy Bush. During the public hearing, Mark Davison of Design Consultants Group was present with the applicant. Cheryl Normando, Sue McCarthy, and Kimberly Grimes, and gave presentation and testimony. Ken and Sue Denbow were present in opposition to the application. On October 22nd, the commission deferred action for further consideration. On November 5th of 2009, the commission discussed this application for old business. Mr. Johnson stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of conditional use number 1800 for Cheryl Norman Doe for office and retail use based upon the record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the project is of a public or semi-public character and would be beneficial to the surrounding neighborhood. Two, the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan update designates this subject property as within the environmentally sensitive developing area and states that retail and office uses are appropriate in this area. Central water is available to the project. The proposed project will have access from Marbury Knoll Road. There will be no access via Route 24. All entrances, intersections, roadway improvements, etc., will be reviewed and approved by DLDOT and will be completed by the applicant as required by DLDOT. The project, with the conditions and stipulations placed upon it, will not have an adverse impact on the community. And six, this recommendation for approval is subject to the following conditions and stipulations. A, the maximum building square footage shall not exceed 9,200 square foot. The proposed building shall be one story as proffered by the applicant. B, the uses shall be limited to office or retail uses. As proposed by the applicant, the following uses shall not occur on the premise. One, filling stations. Two, used car lots or other lots for automotive sales or storage. Three, automotive repair. Four, a liquor store. Five, tobacco store. Six, nightclub. Seven, restaurants. Eight, dry cleaning and laundry establishments. Nine, tattoo parlor. 10, undertaking businesses or establishments or funeral homes. And 11, dog kennels. C, all dumpsters and loading areas shall be screened with a 6-foot-high privacy fence and landscaping. Final site plan shall indicate the location of the dumpster and the type of fencing that surrounds it. D, a 6-foot-high privacy fence shall be placed along the boundary of parcels 111 and 112.01. The final site plan shall indicate the type of fencing in this area. E, all entrances, intersections, roadway improvements, and multimodal facilities required by DLDOT shall be completed by the applicant as required by DLDOT and within the time periods required. F, the project shall be served by an individual on-site wastewater disposal system as approved by DENREC until the site can be served by Sussex County Sewer District. G, potable drinking water shall be provided by Tidewater Utilities Incorporated. H, stormwater management and erosion and sediment shall be constructed in accordance with all applicable state and county requirements and shall be operated using best management practices to provide positive groundwater recharge. I, the site may have two non-illuminated signs, one on Route 24 and one on Mulberry Knoll Road, which shall not exceed 32 square feet on any side or facing, identifying the uses permitted on the same premise. The signs along Route 24 shall include directions for entering the premises from Mulberry Knoll Road. J, parking lot security lighting shall be provided and will have downward illumination and shields so that no illumination will encroach over any property line. K, a landscape plan shall be provided as part of the final site plan. L, any commercial ventilation fans, vents, and heating and air conditioning units will be placed on the roofs of the building. M, no outside speakers, bells, or ringers will be permitted for any use. N, no outside storage of pallets, crates, or building materials will be permitted. And O, the final site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. There was a motion, second, and carried with four votes to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions and stipulations stated. That motion carried 4-0. Mr. Burton did not vote since he was not in attendance during the public hearing. As I noted, there were one letter received signed by two parties in opposition. There was one couple that participated in the public hearing with the commission.
Is that all you had, Mr. Knight? One letter?
With the commission hearing,
oh,
yes.
Oh, okay, the commission.
And
okay.
Just to update the council, your public hearing was held on November 10 of 2009. You had received the commission recommendation. We had received 9 emails in opposition to the application. The same parties were present in testimony. There were also 9 parties who spoke in opposition, and the council deferred action on this application with no specific reason for deferral. And that's all I have unless you have questions.
Any questions for Mr. Lang?
Well, I think Mr. Cole said something about the traffic on 24 as a reason for wanting to defer it. Was that not correct?
Yeah, there's still traffic on.
Not according to the motion.
Go back and look at the intersection.
Well, yeah.
On 24.
Right.
That's what you said.
Right, but it, I mean, it's it, you can look and keep looking.
It's still there.
It's still there.
Still
and nothing's changed, and then the existing conditions are what they are.
E. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I don't see anything with the state or anybody else, you know, making any attempt to change it. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty what it is what it is.
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
Can't give you any more information than that.
All right. Any more discussion before we ask our attorney to read the title? Mr. Moore, please.
Yes, Mr. President. An ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for office and retail use to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 1.50 acres, more or less, than the conditions that Mr. Lank had read. A, the maximum building square footage shall not exceed 9,200 square feet. The proposed building shall be one story as offered by the applicant. B, the uses shall be limited to office or retail uses as proposed by the applicant. The following uses shall not occur on the premises: 1, filling stations; 2, used car lots or other lots for automobile sales or storage; 3, automobile repair; 4, liquor store; 5, tobacco store; 6, nightclub; 7, restaurants; 8, dry cleaning laundry establishments; 9, tattoo parlor; 10, undertaking businesses or establishments or funeral homes; and 11, dog kennels. C, all dumpsters and loading areas shall be screened with a 6-foot high privacy fence and landscaping. The final site plan shall indicate the location of the dumpster and the type of fencing that surrounds it. D, a 6-foot high privacy fence shall be placed along the boundary of parcels 111 and 112.01. The final site plan shall indicate the type of fencing in this area. E, all entrances, intersections, roadway improvements, and multimodal facilities required by DLDOT shall be completed by the applicant as required by DLDOT and within the time periods required. F, the project shall be served by an individual on-site wastewater disposal system as approved by DENREC until the site can be served by Sussex County Sewer District. G, potable drinking water shall be provided by Tidewater Utilities, Inc. H, stormwater management, erosion, and sediment shall be constructed in accordance with all applicable state and county requirements and shall be operated using best management practices to provide positive groundwater recharge. I, the site may have two non-illuminated signs, one on Route 24 and one on Mulberry Knoll Road, which shall not exceed 3,200 square feet on any side or facing, identifying the uses permitted on the same premises. The sign along Route 24 shall include directions for entering the premises from Mulberry Knoll Road. J, parking lot security lighting will be provided and will have downward illumination and shielded so that no illumination will encroach over any property line. K, any landscaping plan shall be provided as a part of the final site plan. L, any commercial ventilation fans, vents, and heating and air conditioning units will be placed on the roofs of the building. M, no outside speakers, bells, or ringers will be permitted for any use. N, no outside storage of pallets, crates, or building materials will be permitted. O, the final site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Those are all the conditions, Mr. Phillips. And if I could remind council prior to the vote, if when voting, be specific on the reasons voting for or against any project.
Question, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Martin.
Mr. Moore read 3,200 square foot on the sign under item number I. It's 32.
Thank you.
32 square feet.
32 square feet.
I knew that was going to be a big sign.
I was trying to read fast before I broke out in a coughing fit.
Yeah. So.
Cough drop, too.
Thank you.
I'll entertain a motion to approve conditional use 1,800.
So moved.
Second, please.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve conditional use 1,800 application by Cheryl Normandew. Any discussion? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Deva?
My vote is no. First of all, we don't have to approve this. Second, it's very important to a lot of people. And we heard from them in testimony. The applicant did not work with the neighbors on this, and I consider this an unfriendly application. I consider it not beneficial to the surrounding neighbors from testimony that we heard here at our hearing. In fact, I believe Mrs. Denbow, who would be living right next door to it with her and her family and her children, got quite upset about the idea of this change. The neighbors felt that there was inadequate notice. The level of service on Route 24 is E, which is almost F, which is failing. DelDOT is not recommending this. DelDOT is trying to cope with this. And in doing that, they're denying an entrance on Route 24. And instead of an entrance on 24, they're going to use an 18-foot wide road, and this is from testimony, and creating an awkward, if not unsafe, entrance. This is an adverse impact on the community at large. And instead of approving this with a listing of 16 conditions, we should just deny it. It's next to the Beacon Middle School. Parents and students are going to be driving in and out, and it is not a safe situation to have this next to the Beacon Middle School. In addition to that, in my opinion, we have approved too many conditional uses. The enforcement of 16 conditions is becoming difficult, if not impossible, for the county. Thank you.
Mr. Wilson.
Well, I don't have to vote for it, but I do have a responsibility. And if these people meet these requirements, which I feel they will if they meet all the regulations and things that we've handed down, on the recommendation of the planning and zoning, I vote yes.
Mr. Cole.
I'll start out with Route 24 is a mess. And Route 24's traffic is at this area is at low service areas, low service levels. Route 24 needs to have extensive DelDOT improvements throughout the entire corridor before we start approving applications such as this. I believe it's out of character with the immediate area. In the old days, we used to hear a lot about spot zoning. I believe this is a good, clear example of spot zoning. It's basically taking a commercial application and dropping it in a little pocket of residential houses. The entrance, obviously, if you look at the site plan, you'll see that the entrance is not on Route 24, which most businesses and any small businessman would know that you need to have your entrances off that major road and your exposure to that. This doesn't provide any of that. So the entrance has basically a negative impact on the neighbors' properties, the neighboring residential properties. I think the new school has also affected the traffic patterns in this area. The intersection right there at the, where this is going to be is, has been described as a dangerous intersection and just would create more problems. There is no light there, and I don't believe there's any plans. As I said earlier, I don't believe DelDOT has any plans, and I don't believe DelDOT made any requirements on this applicant to financially help support any kind of traffic light signal or whatever in that intersection. I believe the project is speculative as per the application. The application basically is they were applying for office or retail. I think a conditional use should be more specific. We've been criticized in the past, and it hadn't come up recently, but we're doing a lot, much too many conditional uses for very vague reasons, but a conditional use should be more specific. This one basically is well, actually should be a B1 zone application, because what they want to do is basically speculative. Like I said, they don't care who comes to the door knocking. It'll be retail, office. Now, office space would have a lot less traffic, and we've discussed the differences between office and retail. Retail could be a nightmare. Just a review of the site plan shows that this application is not appropriate. As I stated earlier, it has been dropped into a pocket of residential property. It is, again, a clear case of spot zoning. There are also, you know, always limits on development. We hear about the limits of the size of, because of the parcel or the size of the building, there's a limit on that, the square footage, there's limits on that, there's limits with setbacks. Vehicle capacity in the roadways in front can put limits on development. Entrance permits. Route 24 is such a problem, and this project, because of its exposure to Route 24, they've required it to put the entrance off on Mulberry Knoll Road, which then will exacerbate the existing problems of entering the roadway. So that so there is a limits on development. I think because of the roadway, the location, and many other things, it doesn't have any sewer capacity issues there, but it does. I think they will get some kind of water service, but these other areas should limit the concern that this development would impact. So my vote would be no because of all those reasons.
Mr. Vincent.
Based on recommendation of planning and zoning, I vote yes.
My vote is yes. This property is not going to adversely impact Route 24 according to DelDOT. In fact, DelDOT did not even recommend a traffic impact study. This is not spot zoning, as it is not a change of zone. We hear oftentimes when projects are proposed in level 4 that they should really be in level 1 and 2. Well, this is in level 2. The fact that there's not an entrance on Route 24 is somehow seen as a negative when really it is going to provide a safer traffic environment. For those reasons, I vote yes. Motion carried. Mr. Moore.
Yes, we have a second and a conditional use by Chase T. Yes. Brockstead. Mr. Lang?
Yes, this is an application to consider the conditional use number, or the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for office buildings to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 1.337 acres, more or less, lying at the northeast corner of Savannah Road and Ritter Road, being west of Lewis. And that is conditional use number 1801. The Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on November 5th of 2009, rendered their decision on November 19th of 2009, and the council public hearing was on December 1st of 2009. During the commission's public hearing, the applicant had provided a large exhibit booklet. We heard comments from DelDOT. The the Conservation District, the County Engineering Department, Planning and Permits Division. We'd received one email voicing opposition from Kathleen O'Hanlon. The applicant, Chase Brockstead, was present with Charles Adams, surveyor, and gave testimony. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the application. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed the application and thereby deferred action for further consideration. On November 19th of 2009, the commission discussed this application under old business. Mr. Burton stated he would move that the commission recommend approval of conditional use number 1801 for Chase Brockstead for office buildings based upon the record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the proposed conditional use is generally similar to other uses in the vicinity of the property along Savannah Route. Two, the project with the conditions and stipulations placed upon it will not have an adverse impact on neighboring properties, community, or traffic. Three, the project is consistent with the county's comprehensive plan update and is in the environmentally sensitive developing district, which permits the proposed use. Four, the property has frontage on two state-owned and maintained roadways. Ritter Road adjacent to the property is state-owned and maintained. Five, the use of offices benefits the health, safety, and welfare of the Sussex County residents and will provide professional and medical offices in a convenient location along Savannah Road near the City of Lewis and VB Hospital. Six, this recommendation for approval is subject to the following conditions and stipulations. A, there will only be one lighted sign on the premise that shall not exceed 32 square feet on each side. B, any security lights shall only be installed on buildings and shall be screened so that they do not shine on neighboring properties or roadways. C, as proposed by the applicant, the hours of operation shall be limited to between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. D, a solid vinyl fence shall be installed along the rear boundary of the property, excuse me. The type and height of the fence shall be depicted on the final site plan. E, there shall be no more than two 7,500 square feet office buildings permitted on the site. F, the applicant must comply with all DLDOT requirements concerning the entrance and roadway improvements. G, the use shall be limited to business and professional uses, including but not limited to medical offices, dental offices, lawyers, accountants, insurance offices, etc. There shall not be any contractor's offices or uses that primarily involve retail sales. H, the final site plan shall include a landscape plan for the property, and I, the site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. There was a motion and second and carried unanimously to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions and stipulations stated. And that motion carried 4-0. In the council public hearing on December 1st, council received the recommendation of the commission. We received, I read the email from Kathleen O'Hanlon. We also received an email in the record from Charles and Ruth Ann Gilwark. I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, and I apologize. Mrs. Deaver asked me if the city of Lewis had submitted comments on the application. My response was negative. Charles Brockstead was present and gave testimony. There were no public comments in support of the application. Kathy O'Hanlon spoke in opposition. And Mr. Cole asked for verification from the Engineering Department about capacity for sewers available. There was a motion, second, deferred action for a period of 1 week pending receipt of a report from County Engineering Department regarding sewer capacity. So that was December 1st. On December 2nd, I forwarded a letter memo to County Engineering, John Ashman, and I received his response on November 4th, which I can read, if I can maintain a voice. or an easier way to write your property.
Thank you for sharing.
We've had this before, right? This was given to us before, earlier on.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it looks familiar, right?
So it exceeds.
Now, on my request from the engineering department stuff, this was before the hearing, right? Or this is what Asherman did after our hearing?
Yeah, it was after.
Okay.
The public hearing was the 1st of December. I sent my memo on the 2nd and got a response on the 4th.
Okay, because I can recall talking at the public hearing when my concern was that this last sentence, that this could be perhaps 2 times the impact fee for all density above what is allocated. The concern is, do we have the ability to do this? And this is where I think Dave and Everett have kind of looked into this, because sewer rates are, or fees, or impact fees are by ordinance. And this seems like an odd way to save, you know, to address the problem. But anyway, do you have any insight on any of this, guys, before we go any further to clarify this?
I can say that the sewer and water fees, or service charges, or connection fees are set by ordinance, and we do that each year as part of the budget. Defer to Mr. Moore.
There was nothing additional I had, because it was my understanding engineering was looking into this and giving you a report on the issues.
I guess the question is, do we have the authority to charge them the rate per the engineering's recommendation? Do we have the ability to charge them a fee?
I would argue that we would not be able to charge an excessive fee. You could charge an additional fee for the purpose of additional EDUs, but not a penalty fee for that.
All right, and
in other words, there'd be a front, like a one-time charge hookup or something.
But you could charge per EDU, just the way you would charge any EDU.
In other words, an EDU is an EDU. So right. If we approve this with the additional EDUs, we can only charge them what everybody else pays, whether it exceeds or not exceeds. So if it has a negative impact, we're not really – engineering department's concern was, I guess, is that the sentence or the whole thing there, as proposed, the project would exceed the size and – you know, a study to downstream infrastructure would not be necessary. However, we feel that the approved project should pay fee towards future upgrades to the transmission or treatment allotment. Probably anticipating, once we do this, you'll do others, because this sets a precedent. And how can you say yes to one and no to the next one? And,
we've done this before, so the precedent has
already
been
set. But I don't know whether that's right or wrong. I'm just, can I, is this still open, Mr. President, to comment?
Excuse me, and I do think Mr. Lank might have some additional information,
okay,
too, but prior to that, my concern over this is if there's not a set formula for how it's being charged, but if it's a fee that's being changed constantly based upon you just picking it, that's the issue that I have with it, as opposed to if you know here is a set fee that's going to be charged per EDU, or for it going over the EDUs.
Mm-hmm.
Do the current?
I was just wondering how. I see engineering departments recommending that, but they don't have authority to do that. As far as I,
that's just a suggestion. If we see
help me
fit
understand.
If we see fit to approve it, they're saying they see problems possibly, and that we need to put some money away somewhere in an escrow account or something like that to resolve those problems. So it's kind of, I don't know. It's interesting, boys. It's interesting.
You want to address that, Mike, President, about this engineering problem?
Yeah.
The one additional item that I was asked, referred to Mr. Lank, wasn't there a letter that was?
I have that.
Okay, you do have that. Okay.
I guess Mike has got a presentation, it looks like, but
I know,
does the
make
current
it clear that he can speak?
Yeah,
public hearing is already closed.
But I was asked to look into this, so I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I want a letter again.
This probably should have, we should have had a workshop something on this, but.
Well, if you think it's inappropriate for me to review this.
I don't know, it's up to Everett.
Yeah, we're getting into areas that go beyond the, we did close the record at the public hearing, although it was specific for some questions that you had, but an entire presentation without the applicant having a chance to respond, I've got concerns with, which goes to the point that I was mentioning with Mr. Lank.
Well, I guess we need to request that Mike keeps his presentation or his answer to the question of
formula. That's correct.
And, for instance, do the current EDU charges have a future expansion component built in?
Yes, they do.
They do, okay.
But not taking in, I mean, just in your normal, I mean, you've got basically, when you charge impact fees, you have, like you say, a built-in amount of money or portion that would be for future expansion if you're following the plan, right? That's for following the plan, the extra money, not for additional funds for future expansion, because we never build the plants or the, you know, a lot of the pump stations to the ultimate capacity. We build them, you know, at one size, and then as we get this other money, then that money helps upgrade so we can still follow the plan. You didn't pump in money or into these fees for not following plan, did you?
Let me say this. West Rehoboth was designed 1991, 1992, before the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan was adopted. We did have the Coastal Sussex Land Use Plan, I think, in effect at that time, but I'm not even sure it addressed those, what was proposed at that point. What we did was a study of the West Rehoboth area, and we took a look at what was going to be developed based upon the comprehensive land use plan that was initially approved sometime around 2000, 2001, and then was more recently updated. So what we've determined that there are lines that are going to be over capacity at some time in the future based upon the development of the comprehensive land use plan that was most recently adopted. I don't know if that answers the question or not.
I have
Mr. Benson, please.
It is my understanding that this plan that we have, that the West Rehoboth Sewer District, when designed, was designed for what was there then to save money for the cost of that system, did not take into anything else. Is that correct?
I would agree with that assumption.
Thank you very
That's
much.
My understanding as well.
There was no Thank you.
There was no plan?
Not if you design a plan that's based on what's sitting there then, not going to happen down the road.
How do you know? What do you know what the future is, Mike? I'm going to just do you.
Well, you got to allow for something. I know when you design something for just what's sitting there today, that can't be a good plan. That's what was done.
I know, but the planning is, Mike, is because there's so much vacant land, as to our zoning map, they figure out, you know, what a C1 allows, an MR allows, and then they plan on that, not changing those numbers. So
you heard my question and his answer. This system, West Rehoboth, was designed at the time it was designed for what was in place right then.
Right then.
Only the buildings. And the vacant, but then you design, Mike, the design took into account the vacant areas and as they were zoned, right?
Not at that time, but when I performed,
you're not listening.
Okay. I didn't come on board until 1996, and I realized pretty soon because I finished out the construction of West Rehoboth that was going to be an issue. That's why we went ahead and performed these planning studies because, again, there's areas that are highlighted in yellow, and we've determined at some point in the future because
exactly
it followed what Mr. Vincent had indicated that we would have some problems. That there are lines that are going to have to be upgraded.
Because it wasn't designed to start with.
That's correct.
The way it should have been.
Okay. So then you're saying then that we have this plan.
Right.
That's correct.
And Mike's saying we have no plan. So do we have a plan or don't we have a plan?
We have a plan now. We did not have a plan in place or did not follow the plan when it was designed in 1990.
If you start a precedent then, Mike, by exceeding the allowable densities that are being promoted by the current plan, and we've seen now this one doubled. Where are we going to be in? Where are we going to end up? Do we have the facilities? It doesn't matter what we did back in 1991 so much, Mike. Now, what we have in the ground is what we have in the ground.
That's correct.
Right. So if what we have in the ground can't accommodate a lot of what we're talking about. So if you start increasing, can we continue to increase and double this density? And how long can we go? Can we do a couple applications and quit?
I think I can speak to this specific situation. Yeah. This line is located, I hope you can see it, right here on Savannah Loyola Road is where the conditional use is. Sorry, my pointer's a little. And it's going to come down. It actually ties in very quickly to our regional pump station. You can see there's a pink line right in that area. It's on West Cotts Road.
And basically, we've known that this line is going to be over capacity at some time in the future. Now, as I indicated when we were looking at the situation,
line is going to be over capacity
at some time in the future. It's not today. So what we looked at,
the uses would be, or the line,
the gravity sewer line. The sewer line will be over capacity at some time in the future.
Okay.
Right
full.
Now,
full.
It should be flowing about half full.
Okay. Okay.
So we looked at it and said, okay, if you add additional 10 EDUs into what's the situation, and I have a hydrograph that we looked at, and I can hand out copies of that. Maybe it's not appropriate.
No, it's
not.
No.
But nonetheless, does it increase the capacity? Yes, it does. But here's the situation. You can look at it two ways. We're going to be over capacity sometime in the future, okay? Not next year, not the year after, but sometime in the future, and we're going to have to go in and replace that line. So you could look at it two ways. One, you could say, okay, well, they'll contribute additional funds, and that will help with the replacement of that line. Or you could look at it, well, it's adding additional EDUs that we didn't plan for, so it exacerbates the situation, and maybe we got to replace it a little bit sooner. But we kind of fall back onto the situation. It's 10 EDUs, not 650 EDUs, so it's...
So
you know,
let me get this straight, Mike. Then, as these applications come in,
yeah,
and those attorneys that are doing them know now that we are, you know, being liberal with this, can we expect then you to do a study on each one so that we can know whether we can approve this or we can't approve the next guy, or would it be fair to most applicants if we had a plan out there and they looked at the plan and they followed the plan? Because since that line's been in the ground how long? Since 1991?
That one was probably put in, I think, is most of it was put in 1991. There was a top half that was a little later by
that line has lasted. It's only half full to 1991. If we follow the plan, it might last for another 30, 40 years.
Oh, rust out for an end, George.
It's possible. And again,
rust out?
You know, let me explain.
They rust out.
The line might wear up, so we need
well,
to
it's plastic.
It out.
It's plastic,
won't wear
Sam.
Out.
It wears too, you know.
Very similar. A couple years ago, we figured out that we had a gravity line on SR-54, and it was going to be over capacity at some time in the future, actually right about that time. So we went out, and we actually did some flow monitoring from June 15th to August 15th. We had a sensor in the line, and we tracked, you know, okay, is this line going to be surcharged over capacity? And sure enough, there were times in July when that line was over capacity. So last summer, we went in and we actually installed a parallel force main. It was at pump station 41 or 31 project. For example, Keller Hopkins upgraded the pump station and underground utilities put in the force main. And we finished that last June. And now we have a situation where that line's no longer being surcharged. So we have a number of those situations in West Rehoboth. And yes, we do collect the impact fees to fund those type of upgrades.
Mr. President, could I make
Mr. Baker, please?
Yes, the connection fees, which is sometimes referred to as an impact fee, is designed to recover the cost for growth. And there's two parts to it. One's transmission and one's treatment. So we look at the capacity of, for instance, the treatment plant, divide that by the capacity in terms of number of EDUs, or the cost of the improvement, divide that by the maximum capacity of that treatment plant and expansion, and come up with a number. And then we typically increase that over time. For transmission side, we do the same thing, so that if we have an estimate from our engineers saying that to add another transmission line or make the needed improvements, whatever's needed, you take that, divide that by the capacity of the future improvements. so that you come out with so much per EDU, and that's how we justify the connection fees. Mr. Izzo and myself looked at it rather sort of cursory type, approach to it, this particular part of the charge, and at this time, it seems to be in the ballpark of what that, you know, based on that methodology. So we have accumulated some funds in the West Rehoboth Sewer Project as a result of all the growth we've had over the last few years. So, and that was the purpose of it. That's, you know, to try to accumulate money for the growth to pay for itself. And it's not perfect. It's not a perfect science, that's for sure. But it is, that's how we developed the fee, and that's the purpose of it.
Mr. Vincent?
I have one last question.
Yes.
I keep hearing this word precedent thrown around here. Will you tell me that as of 2010, this date, there has never been additional EDUs approved for anything in this county?
Did you ever read the paper with Dale Dukes and the boys?
You said we are setting a precedent.
Every time we do it, we are, Mike.
No, you only set a precedent one time.
Okay. All right. Well, then this is your opportunity then,
okay,
as a councilman.
So it's been exceeded a number of times, I would assume.
Probably. Okay. What we try to do is follow the land use plan and design our lines in accordance with the land use plan, and to make also propose upgrades to those lines in accordance with the land use plan.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I have a question.
Ms. Deaver.
What's the plan? The land use plan say for that,
you know,
piece of ground, Mike?
I don't know how it addresses conditional uses.
You're playing games with this. It'll set a precedent, Mike, when this council and new members look at this and listen to this debate and then vote to increase. The others were wrong. It was poor judgment. They made a mistake. And I can't – you show me somebody and tell me why I'm wrong on that when we've exceeded – the densities and the sewer capacity. On the road I live, they've exceeded it there. They've exceeded in Fenwick Island because the last council took in Maryland. We took in, I don't know how many EDUs from Maryland. That's what put us over capacity there. And we didn't take any more additional funds out of them. We gave them a heck of a break because everybody wanted development. So you either keep going down this path, ignoring things like this. It's black and white, in my opinion. It's black and white because we're getting into problems. But we have a plan. Follow this plan. It may not be a good plan, but the plan was based on something, and everything in the ground is based on that plan. So you just can't start throwing that out and figure like it was nothing. It means nothing.
George, I go back to what I said before. You can have all the plans you want. This system was designed before there was a plan.
So
is that
what?
Correct?
No. So what?
No, it was designed on a plan.
George, the man's answered the question.
It was a plan.
I know you're not the county engineer. I do know that.
I don't know.
Ask him the question.
Okay.
This system was designed before there was a comprehensive land use plan.
No, the current plan. It was under another plan, he
said.
We
had the Coastal Sussex Land Use Plan, but I'm not sure how extensive, how it addressed densities. I don't even know if it got to that level.
I mean,
more recent comprehensive.
You don't do
plan
anything, Mike,
mattered.
Without a plan. I'm telling you right now, everything that's done is with a plan. Now, it may not be the current plan because every so many years we change plans, we adopt new plans. But when we put in the sewer in West Rehoboth, it was based on consultants paying a lot of money for us, giving it to the engineering, a plan. It's a plan, not the current plan, maybe.
Well, I tend to say you're wrong, George, because the question I asked that he answered very honestly.
I didn't say
was that right. When this system, this plan was developed,
right,
what they worked around was keeping the cost down for the users, not what might necessarily need to be done.
Well, that's our responsibility. The users own the district, Mike.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank
we
you.
Have to do that.
Mr. Call for a vote.
Mr. Moore.
Second.
May I take the vote?
I have some more questions.
Just a minute, Ms. Deaver.
Call for a vote.
Call for a vote.
If there's a call of question.
Okay. I have a read the title, Mr. Moore.
Okay. An ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for office buildings to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 1.337 acres, more or less, with the following conditions. There will only be one lighted sign on the premises. It shall not exceed 32 square feet on each side. and a security light shall only be installed on the buildings and shall be screened so that they do not shine on neighboring properties or roadways. C, as proposed by the applicant, the hours of operation shall be limited to between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. D, a solid vinyl fence shall be installed along the rear boundary of the property. The type and height of the fence shall be depicted on the final site plan. There shall be no more than two 7,500-square-foot office buildings permitted on the site. F, the applicant must comply with all DLDOT requirements concerning the entrance and roadway improvements. G, the use shall be limited to business and professional uses, including but not limited to medical offices, dental offices, lawyers, accountants, insurance offices, etc. There shall not be any contractors' offices or uses that primarily involve retail sales. H, the final site plan shall include a landscape plan for the property. I, the site plan shall be subject to the review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Those were the conditions.
Motion to that effect.
Got it.
And a second, please. I have a motion and a second to approve conditional use 1801 application of Chase T. Brockstead. Any discussion, Ms. Deaver?
I vote no.
Ms. Deaver, just a minute. Is there any further discussion before we take the vote?
Yes, I had questions.
Okay. I gave you the opportunity.
Mr. Baker was talking about collecting for future growth with these sewer lines. And am I understanding you correctly, Mr. Baker, that we're already doing that, and so we have money put aside at this time to provide for future growth?
Ms. Deaver, may I ask a point of parliamentary procedure? Mr. Moore, we had the call the question.
Yes.
Typically, in the motion and vote process, I am required to open the floor to discussion. In the case of calling the question, is that discussion period foregone?
It is foregone.
Ms. Deaver, I apologize. I will not be able to allow you to have that question answered. It is time to vote. Your vote, Ms. Deaver.
I would like to have Mr. Lank continue his presentation. He was cut off. Is that allowed?
No.
He wasn't finished.
Mr. Moore?
No. Mr. Lank had given a presentation, and there was
a call. He had one more letter.
The issue is the parliamentary procedure of calling the question, Mr. Moore. When the question is called by a council member, all debate is ended and the vote is taken?
That is correct.
Let's not debate, though.
All presentations are ended?
All presentations ended.
Mm-hmm. We have to take the vote, Ms. Deaver.
All right. I know that in the file there's a letter from Lewis that opposes this. And we represent the people of this county. And I would vote no in the fact that the Lewis is against it. Town of Lewis, I'm very well aware of that. That letter is in the file. Also, I believe that the applicant was well aware of the number of EDUs that are available. And I believe that we should stick to our plan. Traffic on Savannah Road is very bad. To try to get out and make a left turn, as was testified about at the hearing, is very difficult. And the people who live back there at Covey Creek were very much against this, and they testified that it's very, very difficult to come in and out of the road there onto Savannah Road. And for those reasons, I vote no.
Mr. Wilson.
Since I've yielded my time to all the rest of them to speak, I'm just going to vote yes on recommendations of planning and zoning.
Mr. Cole?
Now, this, guys, I know everybody likes to make it sound like I'm always opposed to rezonings and things like that. This has nothing to do with the rezoning. It has all to do about the sewer capacity and sewer issues. There is a plan. I'll guarantee you there is a plan, and I will produce the plan, or I'll go, Mike and he'll dig it up. We'll find a plan. Everything we do has planning, and it was planned and laid out, and now that's neither here nor there because whatever the plan is, it's all in the ground, and we need to be concerned about it. So there are limits on all kinds of development. As I alluded to, I think, in the previous application, the size of buildings, the square footage, setbacks, vehicle capacity, roadways, entrance permits, sewer capacity are all limits on what we can do and what we should do, and that's all of a big grand plan. So the history, I said a little while ago, we actually, the county comes to us and says we need a study. We pay for the study.
we accept the study, we make it our document, then we tell planning and zoning to follow the plan. They follow the plan, they do what they can. We also have a responsibility to these sewer districts. They're owned by the users, and we just basically are stewards of these districts, and we have to be, I think, show good judgment and other things like that. So Department of Natural Resources, they support what we've been doing down here in sewer capacity and sewer work, because we've done a very good job. This plan that I'll find and dig up for you and give you a name for it actually is not the state plan. It's not the federal plan. It is the county plan, and so we ought to be following it. So based on the excessive sewer capacity request this application is requiring, again, it's going to set a precedent with this council to approve higher densities in areas that the sewer obviously can't handle, and that it's going to cost and be have additional costs, different construction problems and improvements in the future. So there's just no way, I think, that we can support this. Planning and zoning wasn't aware, my understanding, of this information at the time of their hearing. They weren't. It was not presented. Planning and zoning has had a history of following Sussex County Sewer or Engineering Department's recommendations, and you may see in the future where similar situations come up, and when they are party to this information, have had it in front of them as part of their testimony, they have voted to deny the excessive development that would impact negatively the sewer capacity. So based on sewer capacity, gentlemen, not saying no to development, guys, based on sewer capacity, following good plans, showing good judgment, as elected officials, I vote no.
Mr. Vincent?
Wow. George makes some good points. We certainly have disagreement on this sewer plan, Western Hobith, but that's either here or there. I put a lot of faith in planning and zoning. I think they do a very good job for us, and they recommended to approve this. But I will tell you that I didn't sit here that Delos requiring anything to be done. I've ridden down there. I've ridden down the roads. What concerns me greatly is the road out of that development.
Yes.
Being small.
Yes.
And not knowing what's going to go in these buildings, mm-hmm. It concerned the traffic on that right there really concerned me a great deal. I'm not. I'm okay with the sewer capacity. I'm okay with everything else, I think, but that roadway out of development and the back there is, to me, is a big concern. I'm going to vote no.
The plans of various agencies in government often are in conflict, and we as elected officials are required to make decisions which allows for progress in measured degrees. In this case, we have a conflict between engineering and the land use plan, and that's something to be expected. Engineering is tasked with providing a service based on the decisions of council. So we have full authority to grant approval of this application. If we were to base our decision solely on the engineering plan, whether or not it exists, but as described by Mr. Cole, then we would basically be ignoring many parts of the land use plan, which suggests that we can accept and approve applications that exceed the 4 EDUs per acre, as is the plan of engineering. Engineering has suggested that we double the impact fee for those who exceed the 4 units per acre, but there's never been a time when I recall us discounting the fee to someone who builds less than 4 EDUs per acre. So there is a conflict there, and I think our attorney is correct in suggesting that we don't have the authority to randomly increase fees without passing an ordinance. I do believe planning and zoning was correct in their assessment of this. Mr. Cole is right in that they did not have information on engineering, but I've addressed that. They did have information on traffic and took it into consideration. Based on these facts, I vote yes, but the motion is not approved.
Yes, Mr. President. Could I address one additional item in regards to this matter?
Yes.
Mr. Lank had indicated that there was an additional letter. And what had happened, and this was on the, even though it wasn't reported to you, it was part of the record.
Yes,
the
it was.
Record from Lewis. I made a determination. There was a letter from the town of Lewis. It did not go through the proper channels and get to us properly. However, it did get to the chairman of the Planning and Zoning Commission within time. So I made a ruling that it was going to be allowed as part of the record. In accordance with that, however, Mr. Brockstead was unable to respond because he didn't see it, because it went to a different agency. He sent a response. But when he responded to many other items besides just the issue of the Lewis letter. I likewise, just as allowed the Lewis letter in, I took his letter, and as you can see, I have redacted everything else that he said that did not apply specifically to the Lewis letter, because I did not think likewise it was proper for other items to come in. This, too, is part of the record.
Well, if that came in, how come I didn't get a copy of it?
It came in to me, and I was going to read it into the record after I redacted this.
I would like to have known about it.
But we didn't get a chance. We didn't get a chance.
When did it come in?
It never... His letter was December 28th, but I did not receive it at that point. I couldn't tell you when I received it right now, but we did get it. I looked at it to discuss whether, because I didn't want the council to have it until I determined whether or not it should be part of the public record.
In the future, then, this council should maybe try to be considerate of stuff like that, because it is important for both parties to be heard, and obviously both of them responded. So maybe from now on, if we get to this point, folks, that we have a little flexibility here, and we are knowledgeable that maybe Lawrence is holding some information, we should at least hear it, give everybody a fair shake. And
I also have another, there was another case where a letter came in after the fact, after a hearing, and it's in the file in another application, and I did not get a copy of it. I just heard about it.
If one came in on another matter, I'm unaware of it.
We get a lot.
This one.
Yes, a lot of them come in.
But they're after the record's already closed, so we just leave it in the file because it's dated and stamped now. We have a special stamp just for that purpose to show it came in late.
So it's not made part of the record just because it's in the file.
But
you ruled that Mr. Brockstead's could be made part of the record.
Because we did, even though.
I understand.
Because that special
thing. The county agency received it. It was at the wrong department or
right.
something. But it was sent and received
right.
in the proper time frame.
Yes.
Thank you,
I understand. And then I redacted everything else he addressed in the record.
Thank you.
Well, the difficulty with the first letter that came was from the city of Lewis was that it went directly to Mr. Wheatley. There wasn't any copy sent to Dave or myself. There wasn't any in the file. And when you asked the question at the public hearing on the first, my answer was no, I hadn't received anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out the day later that Mr. Wheatley had received it, he had probably assumed it was a copy of a letter that we had received.
Uh-huh.
But we hadn't received it. And we didn't receive it until he received it the day of the hearing or the day before. And we didn't know it until Wednesday or Thursday after.
I don't see any purpose of this letter being such a big thrust here of importance, because I don't think one of us on this council on that one letter would have changed our vote.
No, I'm not saying it were. I'm just...
Doesn't matter.
I'm just want to make sure.
Mrs. Deaver was aware of it because she asked if we had one.
You're not going to change it. If you said, well, if I had that letter, I would vote different. Well, then we got something here to argue about. But all of us have voted the way we're going to vote, and so... Why don't we go on?
Let's not think about it.
Well, at this point, I think we do need to go on. If this issue becomes an issue based on an appeal by the applicant, we will address it in the future. Mr. Cole, please be brief.
Well, I'll just wait. I can either do an hour or later.
Go ahead.
It's got to do with conditional uses. There's concerns about these conditional uses, too many of them, and they shouldn't be applied as much. There are clear densities established in our zoning categories. When it comes to conditional use, it gives us all this flexibility. But a conditional use, Everton, correct me if I'm wrong, please, is it just basically like an overlay in that existing zone? So in other words, the underlying zoning never changes. So for instance, on that last application, it was an MR zone, correct? And it didn't, I mean, still, even with a conditional use, if a conditional use was
was established, right, Lawrence? Is that it was an MR zone or?
No,
that was an AR zone. Okay, it's an AR zone, and an AR zone is got X amount of density to it. It's still, even if that conditional use got approved, it's still an AR zone, correct, Lawrence?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just with this conditional use. Right. The problem with the conditional use in the AR zone, you go from what's permitted at 2 units to the acre to as many as how many, Lawrence? 12.
You could go to 12.
12. So there's no way agencies and departments can take that in consideration, Mike. Such a spread of 2 to 12. There's no way, Mike. But we, as accepting these applications, still should put a lot of emphasis on the underlying zone, because if that conditional use fails, it's still an AR zone or an MR zone or a B1 zone or whatever the zone is. So I'm just concerned that we forget when we say conditional use, all of a sudden we forget about everything else, and we shouldn't. So just a little editorial comment.
Well, okay. Way I said it, George, according to your philosophy and the way you're thinking.
No, it's not my philosophy. It's just the way it should work.
Let me finish.
It's the way it does work.
The way I said here, if I was an applicant, especially down in that area where they're really crowded, I would stop by and see Mr. Izzo and ask him, said, do you have the capacity that I can hook up? If you don't need me going any further. Why spend any money? Why do anything else? This is the end of this application right here. We're going to let you make a decision whether you can hook up or not. If they can't hook up, forget it. Go on home. Why waste our time?
Sam, are you saying...
That's what you're saying.
No. You're saying the applicant wanting to put in whatever his application is, we may not have capacity for that, but...
Well, if he ain't got capacity for that one, he ain't got capacity for the next one down
there.
There
is capacity at all sites. Can anybody
pick out certain people who can get on?
Mike. Okay. Anyway, never mind.
This is a discussion for another day.
Another day.
Ms. Webb, grant request.
Another month, another year.
First one, Delaware.